Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, it was so good to get some rain over the weekend, but I guess we're going to have to hold out now for a month or so.
Maybe. You know what I liked about it?
What?
It was a nice, steady rain.
Very gentle.
And it just, it lasted for, what, a couple of hours? A
couple of hours.
In certain places, probably.
We had about a fourth of a tenth, close to a half an inch, which was so welcome to all the plants. But we'll have to hang in there here till the summer rainy season, a.k.a. monsoon, comes in about, who knows, 3 weeks or so. Anyway, it's Wednesday. It's the fourth day of June, 2025. It's our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson. We've got five radio stations under one roof. We're delighted to have all five. They're all doing well. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. I'm in my 15th year, so we've got 14 and a half years so far with the radio program, and closing in now on almost four full decades in Tucson radio and TV. We have our worldwide live listening. That means you can hear the program anywhere in the world on your computer. Our podcasts are available at buckmastershow.com. Our telephone interviews are available, and that happens on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tucson City Council Member Ward 3 Democrat Kevin Dahl joins us usually the first Wednesday of the month, depending on sometimes holidays that can change, but normally it's the first Wednesday of the month. Kevin is standing for re-election for a second four-year term. He retired in 2022 from private industry after 14 years working as the Arizona representative for the National Conservation Association. What a great job. Sweet job this was, Kevin.
It sure was.
Yeah, good to see you, my friend. And that job was about, you know, protecting the Grand Canyon, Saguaro, petrified forest. And boy, if you were still in that job, it'd be challenging with the Trump administration making these huge cutbacks in really just about every kind of federal agency, including getting rid of people who man the gates at Grand Canyon. These are young people in many cases, their first job with the Park Service. They're on probation. So guess what? Their jobs are eliminated.
And those are essential jobs. The lines can back up for miles at the gate to the Grand Canyon, and it's very frustrating. No, the cuts have not been surgical. They've been done in many cases illegally, and people have had to come back after being disrupted. The parks are our most sacred American institution. They not only are they pretty places, but they hold our history and our culture, and they're places that you take your family and have transcendental experiences. They're the most cherished resources we have as Americans, and to cut back the service that protects them, that fights fires and keeps people safe. Even law enforcement in the Park Service is being cut back.
It's a horrible situation. I don't get it myself, but no. Maybe some do. Kevin also is the executive director of Native Seed Search, which is a regional group working to preserve the genetic diversity of the southwestern Native American plants. He was also executive director of the Tucson Audubon Society, now known as
the Tucson Bird Alliance.
And how are they doing?
I think they're doing pretty well.
Kevin is the author of Wild Plants of the Sonoran Desert. It's still in print. It was published by the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. His other book is Native Harvest, Authentic Southwestern Gardening, published by Western Parks Association. And the reason, I didn't realize that you actually have a degree in ethnobotany. Botany?
I do, and I always have to explain that. It's botany, but it's the human use of plants, how people
really
use plants for fiber, food, medicine, other uses.
And we were speaking with Tom at the beginning of the show. This was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event to get precipitation on June 1st. It had happened before, but rarely. It was like a drop or two, a trace of rain. So we may never see anything like that again. I don't know how.
I hope it's heralding a wet and productive monsoon season. It was really wonderful to see it. This morning I was walking in a desert area near my house, and I saw some little seedlings coming up.
Really?
I hope there'll be water coming again for them.
Yeah. Speaking of your house, you have something on your front lawn, right? It's called like a free take it now table.
Yeah, a free table. It's not on my lawn. I don't have a lawn. It's on the easement in front of my house. And for 5 years, it has become an institution beyond me. What happened, Bill, was during COVID, I was working at home for the first time and realized I have too much stuff. But every thrift store was closed because of COVID. So, you know, you read what happens in New York and Chicago. People put things on the sidewalk and they're taken away. But I put them on a table and I put up a sign and I invited other people to do it. And literally 24/7, 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and there are people out there with flashlights going through stuff. Tons of material. And what I've learned is we all have too much stuff.
Sure.
And we all like getting free stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah. So who is bringing this stuff? Just
everybody. Right now it's real busy because students and others are leaving town and are leaving behind a lot of stuff. And for some people, this is more convenient than taking it to a thrift store.
Mm-hmm. Do we dare give the address or would you rather not? Why not, right?
It's on Spring between Cherry and Campbell. It's close enough.
Okay. Yeah. All right. The library. This is on city property, the downtown library.
Yeah.
So the Board of Supervisors yesterday approved purchasing the former Wells Fargo building, which looks really great, doesn't it?
It does, right across Stone, right across.
Yeah, 150 North Stone. So the Supes are purchasing that for $6.2 million. There will be millions of dollars in renovation, but I guess kind of nothing close to what it would cost to remodel the Joel D. Valdez Library, which is the main branch located across the street from the Wells Fargo building. Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen to this building?
Well, we own the building in Hakami Plaza, and we own the parking garage underneath. It's prime real estate right in the middle of downtown, right across from the historic Pima Courthouse. I don't know, and I don't think any of us know, but the mayor and the city manager put out a press release and saying, hey, we're going to congratulations to Pima County. That was the economic and correct decision for them. We're going to have to look at what to do with this building that was built in 1990 and needs a lot of deferred maintenance. When was the Wells Fargo built?
About 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Maybe it could even be older.
And it looks so, I think people built things better.
I mean, I'm guessing the 1920s, but if a listener knows, give us a call at 790-2040 and give us the scoop on that. But it does. It looks great.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big addition to the Pima County Library system. And that's one of the systems that there is. We do not have metropolitan government in Tucson, but we do have kind of some of these branches of city and county cooperation.
Yes, we kind of traded things. For instance, Tucson does the water and Pima County does the sewer system, but we share the billing system. And likewise, it used to be Tucson-Pima Public Library, but we backed out of our part of it, and Pima County does a great job of running the library. Such an important part of our society, not only to go find books to read, but so many resources are available to people. Use of computers, information, even just a respite on a hot summer day. Library is a great place to go.
It's interesting how some cities, a place I worked in the 70s for NBC Radio, Las Vegas, went metropolitan government, Clark County. You wonder how, and Miami does that, Dade County. Tucson, I don't think, could have ever handled that.
There probably wasn't a point in time when the politics were right to
do
that.
No, would ever have done that. All right, the tweaking of this proposed $2.4 billion with a B city budget. What do you like about the spending plan, and what are you a little bit concerned about?
What I like about it is we have a balanced budget. Now, of course, we're required to have a balanced budget. When we spend a lot of time on the budget process, starting shortly after the new year, looking at different parts of our budget. And fairly recently, we were $27 million in the hole. What I don't like about it is that our funding from the state, we have state shared resources, because I think the mismanagement of the state budget by the decision to do the educational vouchers have taken a lot more money than was required. And then the flat tax means that people who are earning a lot of money don't really pay their fair share and feed into the safety nets that we use this money for. So we're looking at declining revenues from the state and federal funding. I mean, we joined a lawsuit because so many grant funding in our police department, transportation, housing were being clawed back. And I just saw yesterday there was a good ruling, and the court asked required the feds to start giving the grant money back out. We do a 5-year rolling projection too, and the next fiscal year, which will start in the middle of next year, could be even harder for us.
Boy, was I wrong about the date that building was constructed.
Uh-oh.
I know.
62.
57.
Wow.
Thanks to one of our fine listeners, ask a question, and we get an answer. The building was constructed in 1957 by the now defunct Southern Arizona Bank and Trust and served as Wells Fargo's main branch until it closed in 2023.
Wow.
Well, it looks like it's 100 years old.
It's still it's beautifully designed, and it is still 33 years older than our building.
Yeah. All right, let's pause right here. It is the Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Kevin Dahl is here, Tucson City Councilman. Lots to talk about on our agenda, including some of the items that were on the City Council agenda just yesterday. All right, we'll be right back.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. There we go. In the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, it's our midweek edition. Coming up on Friday, our Friday Focus interview, former Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek. And Steve he resigned his position from the council, and then he went to work for the county, and then he was tasked with a big job in January, taking over Pima Animal Care Center. We had him on at that time, and he had pretty much just started. So we want to check in with him on Friday, and he's got several initiatives that he's working on to try to improve animal welfare issues in our community. So we'll look forward to speaking again with Steve Kasachek, who's always a very articulate interview, as is Kevin Dahl, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, representing Ward Number
3.
All right, Kevin, we had a question come in during the break. You had said something about a reference to fair share of taxes. What do you consider to be fair share of taxes?
Yeah, the new state income tax the last couple of years is a flat tax. Everybody pays the same percentage. Think back to the 1950s when the U.S. income tax was the most progressive it ever was. Very high percentages for the most high earners. Now, this doesn't really impact them because they're making a lot of money. That was the way the federal government got the money it needed to really build America. That's when we built the interstate systems. That's when we built the bridges and airports to make this country great. That's what I mean by fair share. People who are making a lot of money are making that money using the infrastructure, the city, the county, states, and federal government. And so they need to proportionally do a larger share than someone who is just getting by or is raising a family. And a progressive income tax, which lower percentage for lower income and a higher percentage for people who are making a lot more money. Mm. Progressive taxes is what I think is a fair share.
How are we doing with roads in town? I noticed some of the roads that I've tried to avoid, I will not be avoiding in the future because they're getting attention.
Yes, we're doing a pretty good job. We will never have the resources to maintain our road system. Tucson's environment is tough on our roads because it's hot. Many of our roads are used for stormwater runoff, and that just eats away at the asphalt. And we have large truck traffic, especially in some particular areas, that just wear out roads. But we have some funding sources. There's federal fundings, knock on wood, from the gas tax, HERF money, they call it. And the city voters a couple of years ago also passed a half a percent sales tax, mm-hmm. that's used entirely for our road system. And in the 10 years following that, and we're 2 years in, every neighborhood road will be touched. We'll be getting either complete makeover or repair, whatever it needs to bring it up to snuff. And it's a very complicated process who gets first dibs, but it's very transparent. And you'll see both arterials and corridors get improvement. And you'll see areas like Grant Road that are under construction forever. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, I believe the RTA, our 25-year project, it was mismanaged, and especially in the last 15 years, and they've run out of money. So we're going to have to work hard to figure out how to finish the Grant Road parts that aren't done and First Avenue.
That sign that I see every day, road construction, as I come up to the Grant Road intersection, I think they need to actually make it a permanent sign.
Hey, and let me put out a pitch for the businesses there.
Yeah,
if you have a favorite restaurant or a place to go buy things and you're avoiding it because of the construction, please take the extra 10 minutes and get there because those people are suffering.
I bet.
And there are some great restaurants in that stretch of road.
All right, the next time you'll be with us will be the week of the 4th of July. Are we moving ahead even though we are in this very severe drought? I think the total rain that we had a couple of days ago on Sunday was, about a half an inch. That's the rain for the year, folks. We're way below the rain we should have been. Is it prudent to have a fireworks show on the 4th of July?
On a mountain that's covered with flammable grass? No, it's not prudent, but it's been in the works for a long time, and this is going to happen. By the way, it's not city-funded. Our tribal partners pay for the fireworks for that. But it, there is a city expense because basically fire department has to cover the mountain with water and have a lot of equipment there to put out fires. I've argued, and I think my colleagues will, some of them will join the conversation soon. Let's convert it to a beautiful drone show or a laser light
show, yeah, which is becoming very popular around the country.
Yeah, and they're gorgeous. And not only is the fear of fire, but the loud noises is hard on our animal friends. It's hard on veterans, and it's hard on people who don't like being startled by loud noises and can't sleep. Wakes up sleeping babies.
Mm-hmm.
I think the time has passed for fireworks to commemorate our war with Britain. We're allies now. Let's celebrate our partnership and have some sort of beautiful display instead.
It's too late to change this year's show, but then this conversation should continue, correct?
I think in August or September, we may even have a study session at Mayor and Council to discuss it.
Because other cities are doing that, the drone shows and laser shows.
Even Suarita, I understand, has a drone show now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a very big city, so it may not be very big, but I think we need to get in step. The danger of wildfires in Tucson is too real,
mm-hmm.
and the impacts of the noise are also horrendous.
So voters in the city will have an item on the ballot of something called Yes or No on Plan Tucson 2025.
Yes, the state requires us to do a general plan, which is like a 30,000-foot overview of how we want the city to be and to grow. We've revised that. We've spent, I think, almost 3 years with all sorts of public engagement, stakeholder meetings to bring our current general plan, our Plan Tucson, up to date. And I think we've done a pretty good job. We had the final hearing at Mayor and Council yesterday, and it will be before the voters. And there's lots of information on our website if you want to look at any aspect of it, transportation, a growth map, all sorts of things.
But if it were to fail, what would happen?
You know, I don't know the consequences. We'll probably have to try again.
Yeah.
It's required by law for us to update it. And I don't think there's a penalty if the voters vote it down. We might get some feedback and would have to rework it. But I suspect that most people will like mm-hmm. the work that's gone into it.
Now, also on the ballot would be something about TEP again?
Possibly so.
Is this a work in progress? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
We still have
it's
some...
Kind of confusing because there are a couple of elements here.
It's very confusing, Bill. There's two issues going on. Yeah. The franchise, which is a long-term contract between the city and TEP that allows them to put their infrastructure, their telephone poles, et cetera, on city land and easements, is coming up for renewal. And that's what we have on the ballot. In addition to that, we've been negotiating with TEP on some side contracts that we to become partners in going towards clean energy. At the same time, as part of our climate resiliency plan, we hired a contractor to look at other possibilities besides TEP for getting clean, renewable energy to the city of Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And their report has come out, and to my surprise, they've determined that it would be feasible for us to become a municipal energy utility. Feasible, maybe not practical, maybe too expensive, but it's something that we will look at. And there were some other options, consumer choice energy, mini grids, some other things that doesn't involve kicking TEP out and taking it over at a huge expense. And we'll be continuing to look at all of those. They're two separate issues. The franchise doesn't affect the potential for public power at all.
All right, slip your headset on there, Councilman, and let's see if we can work in. Matt is on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Matt, we are at the two-minute mark, so you're going to have to be really quick. Go ahead.
Yeah, Councilman, as you may have seen in the news yesterday, the county discussed their decision to buy the Wells Fargo building across the street and move the main library there.
We discussed this at the top of the show.
Oh, that I asked the producer and he wasn't sure. Okay, I'll leave it. I'll listen on later. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, thanks. So it was an item that, the thing about radio, live radio, especially the noon hour, which I like because it's a drive time. People are in and out of cars.
Yeah.
They're going to luncheons. They're going to activities. And so people do, you know, they jump in the car and they didn't perhaps hear that first segment. And to kind of summarize for Matt.
Yeah, it's completely Pima County's decision, and I think from their perspective, a good one. It leaves us with a resource, which I think is a huge asset. We own the building, we own the parking lot underneath it, we own the whole plaza. Mm-hmm. So there are no immediate plans for what we're going to do with that, but we will certainly quickly start the discussion of what we're going to do with that.
What was the cost to fix it up, like $90 million?
It was remarkably high, which made me think about who was the architect of that building. Or maybe it was our fault for not, or maybe the county's fault or both of ours for not doing the regular maintenance that needs to be done. And now the bill has come due.
All right. Your newsletter continues to amaze me. You guys put out so much information. How does someone get it?
Google Ward 3, City of Tucson, Ward 3, and there's a place on the front page where you can sign up for it. We just need your email. It comes out on Fridays. If you like it, stay with it. If you don't, you can turn it off.
I mean, there's so many activities that you've got listed there. It's like there's if someone just visited from Mars and they wondered about Tucson.
Well, we're not doing it for the Martians, Bill.
No.
We're doing it for the residents of Ward 3, but also for everybody. And Tucson's full of great things, and we try to highlight the good things that are happening as well as some of the problems that we're working on.
All right, Kevin Dahl, we will talk to you the week of the Independence Day holiday, which is on a Friday this year. So we'll see you on the Wednesday of that week. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, take the mid-show break. Talk education with our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks. He's on the live line. Be with us right after this.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We continue to get folks sending me messages about the Wells Fargo building. I asked during our interview with Councilman Kevin Dahl, when was it built? It looks like it could have been like 100 years ago, but the answer to that is surprisingly 1957. Also, and Kathy sends me a message. She says a better question for Councilman Dahl when we're talking about fireworks. Why do you, I guess the city, allow fireworks to be sold in Pima County at all when there is such a high fire danger? So anyway, that Kevin has left, so we can't ask him about that, but we'll certainly ask him about that when he's with us the week of the 4th of July. All right, this portion of our program, we, of course, are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, and Green Things, everybody's very happy over at Green Things. Why wouldn't they be? Things are greener now at Green Things after our, I don't know, about a half inch of rain. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13 vibrant acres filled with incredible variety of plants, cacti, fountains, outdoor furniture, and Arizona's largest selection of pottery. Family owned and operated since 1970. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business is Zocalo Village. That website, zocalovillage.com. So when we do our telephone interviews, and we're going to be doing a telephone interview here momentarily, that is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Robert Hendricks is a lifelong educator. He served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. He's an associate professor emeritus and associate dean of the University of Arizona College of Education, former Arizona Superintendent of the Year, School Superintendent of the Year. Dr. Hendricks remains active in the Tucson community, active being all his work with Interfaith Community Services, where he is currently the president of that board of directors of ICS, and they do such great work. They partner with over 120 faith communities, servicing more than 52,000 individuals each year, from food needs to economic opportunities, financial crisis. They're there to help. Dr. Hendricks, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Bill, and yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. We had an interesting letter to the editor about teachers and the teachers at BASIS, Tucson North.
Yes.
I guess, did they unionize? Is that what's going on?
They did unionize with actually the second largest affiliated teacher union in the country, the NEA and the being the first, and the affiliation with the teachers union group being the second. American Federation of Teachers. So it's not a very large organization, or I should say doesn't have much presence in the Tucson community, but certainly across the country, particularly in urban areas, the AFT is very, very large, very active. Of course, this is a right-to-work state. So in Arizona, the unions can express a voice, but the district or the operator really doesn't have to listen to them. And apparently, in this case, which has to do with individuals who belong to this organization, and they apparently have some issues with the BASIS school program, and BASIS can rightfully, based on precedent in Arizona, choose to listen to them or not. And apparently they're choosing not to.
Well, it's kind of concerning. One of our online news services reporting AmFi is laying off, I think, a couple of dozen teachers. You hate to see that happen when there's so much, you know, it's so hard to recruit teachers in the first place.
Well, here's the problem, and I know it from being there. You're playing a numbers game. you're playing a numbers game in terms of your enrollment, which is sometimes highly unpredictable. You're playing a numbers game in terms of how much funding you're going to receive. And so districts have to play it very conservatively in terms of the number of people they commit to, because once they commit, once the fall semester begins, they're locked into that commitment for the year. And so what districts do, right or wrong, is they identify a certain number of positions that they're going to give notice that they're not going to renew. And then if the numbers materialize, they offer them contracts back. Not a good way to operate business, but, you know, it's the reality of not knowing what the funding is. And unfortunately, oftentimes those people that are notified are the youngest people on the staff. And sometimes I would almost say some of the more enthusiastic people on the staff. But and a lot of those people are not going to return, even if they're offered a position back, because they're going to go look elsewhere. And we know there are lots of places to look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a team.
So I understand Amphi's position, and I would wager to guess, Bill, that there are other districts that are in the same dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Tucson Unified is going to go out for an override this fall. Any thoughts on that, Dr. Hendricks?
Well, overrides are very difficult to pass because they really deal specifically with salary. There's really two kinds of elections. There's override elections or there are bond elections. Bond elections, I've always said, are easier to pass because they tend to be capital improvements, whether they're new roofs or new air conditioning systems or new buildings or renovations. People know that, they can see it, and they tend to be more likely willing to support that. Overrides are a little more dicey because, again, it's salaries, and people sometimes have the opinion that teachers are underpaid, but there are also this group of people who feel like they're overpaid or they shouldn't be paid anymore. And so it becomes very controversial, and I would say any district in this particular climate that's asking for an override, particularly with the economic situation, it's going to work really, really, going to have to work really hard to pass it.
Yeah, and it's been a long time, I guess, since an override did pass at TUSD.
Yes, I mean, there are districts in Arizona that have never passed one. I mean, they keep going back to the electors, and they don't pass them. There are others who have had 100% success rate. It kind of depends on the cell and what kind of support you get from the community. And I think lots of times it's a reflection of how people feel about schools in general, because remember, the people that are voting don't always have children in schools. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to make a decision based on their perception of how well the school's doing in the community where I live. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have a good perception of it, it's likely they're not going to vote yes, or they're not going to vote at all.
All right, we're going to pause right here. And when we come back with Dr. Robert Hendricks talking about the dismantling of the Federal Department of Education, we'll talk with Dr. Hendricks about that right after we take a short break and segue into our segment number 4. Be right back. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities,
The News and Suns media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
And we are cleared for takeoff for segment number four on the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. This portion of our program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. 77 degrees, lucky double seven over in Silver City during the noon hour. Well, actually, they're an hour ahead, so it's 1 o'clock. What a beautiful day over there. They have some great summer weather. Check it out. Start your planning now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, and you'll have a terrific time. A lot of outdoor activities and just hanging out in historic Silver City. Some great restaurants there as well. Let's go back to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. My friend, Dr. Robert Hendricks, who served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. He's a lifelong educator, and he is our contributor on education. The move continues to dismantle the Department of Education. Is this a bad thing, Dr. Hendricks?
Well, it's a hot topic, that's for sure. And we know that it was a promise that President Trump made that he was going to dismantle and ultimately eliminate the Department of Education. Not the first time a president has tried to do that. President Reagan attempted to do it as well when he came into office. In fact, his Secretary of Education, Terrell Bell, who I know and have great respect for, issued a 91-page report recommending that the agency be reduced to a small research foundation. But there really wasn't any action. In fact, by the end of Reagan's term, the department had grown by about 18%. So, but growth is not what we're talking about right now, because already 1,300 federal employees in the Department of Education have been released. This is about 25% of the total number of people that work in that agency in the District of Columbia.
What do they do? What do they do for the state of Arizona? How does that play into education in this state?
Well, therein lies the question, because you know, when the department was first formed in actually 1979, it was formed by President Jimmy Carter, and it was interesting because, and we've heard this again and again, he had tremendous pressure from the National Education Association, and it was a promise, campaign promise, that he would open this department in return for their support. And, you know, it's continued for 45 years as a department. But to get to your question, a lot of people really don't know what the Department of Education does at the federal department level.
What do they do?
They don't.
Yeah.
Well, it's really a good question. And they have some major responsibilities, but the superintendent is a cabinet member, is responsible for some very, very large programs. Basically, the two that we hear most about are Title I, which sends extra money to schools with large populations of low-income people, and the state of Arizona definitely benefits from that because we have large pockets of youngsters that need that extra help. They receive in the neighborhood of $38 billion to operate that program.
Hmm.
And then the second program that we hear a lot about is IDEA, which represents an additional expenditure of $14.2 million, and that helps special education services for students with disabilities. Again, this is a very important program. Both these programs are very important in terms of the welfare of students in educational enterprise. But interestingly enough, only 10.6% of the financing of schools comes from the federal government. Hmm. In terms of what the Department of Education does, the rest of the money is called flow-through money. In other words, this is money that goes immediately out of the budget of the department directly to states. So our state, for example, receives very large amounts of money, discretionary money, that goes to supporting these programs. And there's other programs too. There's the probably one that a lot of people are familiar with are the Pell Grants, which support the financing, the scholarship of students who are going to college. So all these things have come to pass in a way that it raises the question: what does the department really do? Well, they distribute money, and the cabinet secretary is basically, in some ways, like our state superintendent. They really don't have any power. They can influence Congress. They can influence the president, but they don't really have authority to do much in terms of making changes. A good example of that, and probably I think maybe the best example of an initiative that came from the department, was the No Child Left Behind program during the Bush era, where we really established standardized, national standardized tests to measure from state to state how students were doing. I think that was a landmark effort, but it came out of the push from the president, not from the push of the secretary. In fact, there have been 13 secretaries of education, and I would wager to guess that probably your listening audience could name very few of them.
That's for sure. You know, I mean, so if let me ask you the obvious question. If these programs go away, who's paying? Who the state would have to pick up the slack, right?
Right. I don't think the programs are going to go away because in some ways they're part of congressional law, and particularly the ones that involve civil rights legislation. It's the question is who's going to administer them, and the question is, do we need a department to do that, or can we take various components of what's done and move it to other departments? For example, before the Department of Education, there was a department that included education and health services. Well, health services still is active. It's still involved in programs. Could we possibly move some of the things to other departments? And can we move some of the things to the states? I think we can. I think we can do that. And I'm not sure I'm totally in agreement with eliminating the department, but I'd have to see what other entities would be willing to take the responsibilities of each of these areas.
Let me quickly segue to our state legislature, which still is trying to hammer out a budget. I wonder how that's all going to play. Well, I'll answer my own question. The deadline is June 30th, and I would not be at all surprised if this carries on right up until the deadline. But I wonder how teachers may fare in the state budget. Do you have any clues on that, Dr. Hendricks?
Well, it's, you know, there's I think my understanding is there's going to be some holdover money. So really we maybe have another year for districts to figure out what they need to do if this money is not going to become continually available. But again, we're playing a lot of political games as to what our legislature is willing to do to bring, you know, this money back, you know, on the table. And part of it has to do with the voucher system and some sort of guarantee that the voucher system is going to stay in place. And if it doesn't, the suggestion is, well, we're not going to support a general education fund to support further reimbursements for teachers.
All right, Dr. Go ahead.
Go ahead. It's an unfortunate situation because, again, we're in a situation where teachers are caught in the middle. School districts are caught in the middle. We know we have the students. We know we have the needs. Are we willing to support the districts financially and not hold the districts hostage because of some ideological system that some legislators believe in?
All right, Dr. Hendricks, we'll catch up with you next month. Until then, all the best to you. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. Take care.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, it's Bill Buckmaster saying, hope everybody stays well. Have a great afternoon.